The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
If we have to stand alone, we will stand alone. If we need to, we will fight with our fingernails. But we have much more than fingernails. These are the words of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The strong statement follows an ultimatum from US President Joe Biden, who said that a major Israeli offensive on Rafah will result in a shut off of US weapon supplies. Now, we'll be talking to Professor Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University, in a moment. But first, we're joined by Euronews Europe correspondent Shona Murray. Shona, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, what is the European position on all of this? Because there have been statements made, but they are disparate and maybe not as loud as they should be.
Well, they're certainly not as loud. And finally, there was an agreement at the last European Council last month amongst all 27 member states calling for Israel not to go into Rafah. And that is the strongest statement that could materialise over the past 6 months. As you know, there's such fractured interpretations of this war from member states. Some countries will never, ever condemn Israel publicly, like Hungary, the Czech Republic, Austria. So they did call for that. However, there was never any outline of what the consequences may be, or whether there would be any consequences. And if you look, for example, Ireland and Spain had asked the European Commission to look at the Israel-EU Association Agreement, where there are stipulations around human rights. Leo Varadkar, when he was Taoiseach, said that Israel has flagrantly breached these, but there has been no suspension or discussion around suspension or even investigation as to whether Israel has breached it.
So there is no appetite for a direct confrontation with Israel on trade. What about the notion of recognising a Palestinian state? There will be a vote in the General Assembly of the United Nations today, and it's expected that there will be an overwhelming vote to allow Palestine to be recognised or get further recognition than it has currently in the United Nations. What, are the EU countries likely to vote in favour of that?
Well, today, it's kind of state minus. It's sort of recognition at the UN level, but it's not recognising Palestine as a state. So there will be perhaps some member states that could vote for that, because I did an interview with the Palestinian Minister for Foreign Affairs. He thinks that some member states will be on board with that, Malta, for example. But recognising Palestine as a state is something different, and that's something that definitely Ireland and Spain are looking at, perhaps Norway as well, and Slovenia. And what I heard was that this could happen definitely within this month. There's a tentative date of 21st of May, but that's not confirmed. And the idea being that, I mean, almost all of those countries had said they would recognise Palestine when the conditions allow, which would have meant that there would be negotiations around a two-state solution. But of course, that hasn't happened, as we know. In fact, the exact opposite has happened. We know that Netanyahu has said that one of his ambitions is to ensure that there is never a two-state solution. Yeah. So the idea is to create one, or at least give some momentum of one, through diplomacy and non-violence. And that's what Ireland and Spain look to do. And also a message to the Palestinians that, you know, we are with you, and a message to the Israelis saying that we won't give up on our demands for a two-state solution.
So you're saying that within the EU, there will not be a common voice on foreign policy in this regard, that there will be states, including Ireland, which will opt for recognition of a Palestinian state, and then others who certainly will not.
That's right. I mean, you could never imagine Germany at this point without there being a roadmap of a two-state solution coming from the Israelis doing that. The Hungarians will never support anything when it comes to Palestine. I heard that from several sources in the European Commission, that regardless of how desperate and savage the assault in Rafah is, and we are seeing so much emerging from there over the past few days, some really harrowing scenes of impaled children and things that you couldn't even describe right now. No matter how bad that gets, and even Joe Biden has said it's not right, it's wrong. And we haven't even seen that offensive in earnest in Rafah yet.
There will be countries
that will never recognise Palestine.
The reason for the Hungarian position, one can understand Germany and Austria, given their Nazi history and the Holocaust, having reservations about doing things that would, if you like, historically offend Israel. What's the reason for Hungary's position on this?
It's a very hard one to discern, because it's something that I've been asking for some time now. And part of it is because, I mean, if you take some of the statements from Viktor Orban, he is quite xenophobic when it comes to Muslims. He's described refugees as Muslim invaders. And one part of his sort of raison d'être or modus operandi is to say that he wants to keep Europe white. He's a Christian fundamentalist or nationalist, and he's quite far right, and he has strong links with Netanyahu. So even though he also uses anti-Semitic rhetoric when it comes to the likes of George Soros as well. So it's mainly coming from a political perspective, because like you said there's no normal historical link, such as the same as Germany or Austria when it comes to Palestine or Israel. I think it's a closeness with Netanyahu. And Netanyahu, as we know, is someone who has tried to prevent a two-state solution, but also someone who has admitted to allowing Qatar fund Hamas in order to keep the Palestinians divided, to ensure, again, that there's no unity among them.
Mm. Now, the final question is really about the nature of the recognition of a Palestinian state. And, you know, we've talked before on the programme about it. You've got, on the one hand, the West Bank, which is governed by Fatah, which is deemed to be corrupt by one and all. And then you've got Gaza, which was, up to the invasion, ruled by Hamas, which has revealed itself as if it hadn't already been labelled as such, as a terrorist organisation. So what exactly are people going to recognise?
Yeah, this is the key question. I assume it's about reinforcing the Palestinian Authority insofar as, and also recognising negotiations in the past around Palestinian agency in the West Bank, and then finding out which parties to work with. I mean, already you see members like Abbas's people, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, working with international governments and trying to at least create, a semblance of statehood and somebody that can be recognised as an international partner. So I think it would be really about concentrating on that, but it would have to be very much worked out. But I think the Palestinian Authority is the start.
As a start. Shona Murray, Europe correspondent for Euronews. Thank you very much for joining us, listening to our conversation. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, we'll go back to that topic with Shona in a minute, that Shona was talking about. But let's talk about Netanyahu. We'll fight with our fingernails, but we've lots more than fingernails to fight with. So can he go it alone into Rafah without the backing of the Americans?
He can. How long he will be able to continue is another matter. I mean, what the Americans seem to be now withholding are basically the big offensive bombs and probably artillery shells as well. Now, I think the Israelis were due to take a huge number, I think 1,800 of the 2,000-pound bombs. And those are devastating weapons. They're very modern explosives. And a single bomb could demolish, a high-rise block of flats without any trouble. And then there are a number of smaller bombs as well. And that becomes more progressively difficult for the Israelis if their own stocks start to run down, because they always have to have very heavy stocks from their perspective because of the possibilities of other wars with Iran or with Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. So it is not just about Gaza. And so it will have a psychological impact more or less straight away. A military impact in good time, but very difficult to say what that timescale would be. But overall, if it becomes probable that the United States is banning what you might broadly call offensive weapons and still allowing the Israelis to have basically anti-aircraft missiles, anti-missile missiles, then that is going to be pretty devastating. And at some stage, any other Israeli government, I think, would have basically agreed they've got to have talks now. But that is not in Netanyahu's character, not least because he has to survive himself.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be Netanyahu's one-man war in the sense that it's all about his own political survival. And we talked on the program before that it might be about his legacy. He was the man who freed the hostages. He was the man who defeated Hamas. However, he was also the man who let the guard down that allowed October the 7th to happen.
Yes. And I mean, if the war does come to sort of some sort of very messy, grim, negotiated end, then basically it will all be on Netanyahu. But let's be careful here. I mean, we've had systematic reports of violent actions against the United Relations Relief and Ways Agency in East Jerusalem by Israelis, two lots of arsons. In fact, they've just had to evacuate the entire complex, which is large. And there's a report that a large convoy was going to cross the border from Jordan into southern Israel at Aqaba through to Eilat, and Israeli protesters stopped it. So there's still a lot of support for the conflict from the Israeli point of view, but not, as you say, for Netanyahu. But the overall result of this is a very messy position in which Netanyahu is going to do his very best to survive. But it's looking more problematic for him. And he knows that if it comes to an election, he is very unlikely to stay in power. And then, of course, he is subject to all the different court cases that are currently eluding him.
Now, when you look to the United States, what cohort of people in the United States would regard what Joe Biden has done as some sort of betrayal of Israel?
Well, there are a lot, of course. I mean, I wouldn't use the term Jewish lobby in the United States. Of the 7 million or so Jews in the United States, their tendency, if anything, is to support Democrats. And in many political areas, they're really regarded as pretty moderate. But as far as Israel is concerned, it's the Israel lobby. And you have to look at, yes, a powerful Jewish lobby, if you like. But in addition, you have to have the many other supporters of the State of Israel. And although I'd now gone a little bit about this, one mustn't forget the role of the Christian Zionists. You know, within the United States, evangelical Christianity makes up about getting on for a third of the entire population. That's over 100 million people. Of those, a good minority, maybe 20 to 30 million one way or another, actually would describe themselves as Christian Zionists. They see Israel as part of God's plan for the end days. And essentially, the Jews must be in charge when it comes to the end days. That's it very bluntly. It's known as dispensation theology. And essentially, that's a very powerful belief. And you find that many of the mega churches in the southern United States have close links with individual settlements on the occupied West Bank. So I know it's a long answer, but the thing is, it's a complicated picture in which the support that Israel gets in the United States does not come just from the Jewish population. It comes from a much wider field and is certainly much higher in terms of population than, say, the equivalent in Britain.
Meantime, the Israelis have decided that the truce talks are off, which will facilitate going into Rafah. So was all of that a mirage?
Well, I think it seems that there were diplomats and experienced people who thought there was some chance. But we've been here so many times before. And yes, I mean, the Israelis have now withdrawn. I gather that the Hamas delegation has now returned to Qatar. I think the Qataris may also have returned. So basically, at the moment, Cairo is pretty empty as far as diplomacy in this field is concerned. But yes, we're seeing really, I suspect, well, I think the crude answer is that Netanyahu appears from his behavior to do everything he can to prolong the war, just as Biden wants to shorten it. And the real issue now, and the lives of many people depend on it, is who actually wins on that. At the moment, Netanyahu is determined to go on, and it does not seem he will yield to anything. And he still has enough support among ordinary Israelis. We always have to remember the shock of 7th of October of what that did to Israeli self-confidence. So, yes, for the moment, I'm afraid it goes on. And Netanyahu will do everything he can to avoid any kind of formal negotiations.
What difference do you think it makes, Paul, that Israel has shut down Al Jazeera?
Well, that's difficult to say. I mean, Al Jazeera English, and in fact the much more common other languages, is a very important outlet. It's the only major professional news outlet that has kept a full television crew in Gaza right the way through, at a cost of lives of some of the people. So it is very important. But against that, within Israel, I mean, when I talk to Israeli Arab friends who are sort of within Israel, but from an Arab perspective, essentially the great majority of Jewish Israelis simply do not want to know what is going on in Gaza, and certainly do not know it. And the formal Israeli media, particularly the state-controlled media, the state-orientated media, just doesn't deal with it. Now, there are exceptions. There are one or two small outfits. And there is the sort of rough Israeli equivalent of the Guardian, Haaretz, which is a significant newspaper which comes out with different views. But overall, Israelis tend to deny that anything serious is happening. And this goes back again and again and again to the trauma of 7th of October. I know people keep saying this, and the loss of life on the Israeli side is minuscule compared with what has happened to Palestinians. But nevertheless, that is where they're coming from. And it's a very difficult one to break down. bit by bit, I think there is an increase in Israelis thinking, can we not get this war to an end? But how far that has gone is very difficult to say.
Now, the move for recognition of a Palestinian state, and I adverted to it in my conversation with Shona, the question of what are you recognizing? Are you, you know, do you reward Hamas for October the 7th because they were subsequently punished so much by Israel following the invasion of Gaza? Do you reward Hamas with that recognition of statehood? Do you reward Fatah, the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank? For all its failings, it is still a government and it is being put upon with the settlements by the Israelis. I mean, it is a very difficult tightrope to walk, I think.
It's an extremely difficult tightrope for war, because one man has to add, there's no end of violence going on in the West Bank from settlers and from the IDF against Palestinians. Loss of life most days, land being confiscated, houses being blown up, all that is going on and leading to a sort of a deep anger among Palestinians. It doesn't mean that a new intifada is imminent, but it does mean that there and across the whole region, you're getting more and more anger at what Israel is doing. That is also reflected, I think, in the attitude of many, what you know, we call the Arab street, many ordinary Arabs across the Middle East, more and more dissatisfaction against their own elites. And I think we have to recognize this. And there have been some major clampdowns recently. Jordan, according to Amnesty, I think, has imprisoned about 1,500 people, basically for protesting against insufficient action by the Jordanian state against Israel. So it's more complicated even than what's happening in Israel itself. But yes, it's extremely difficult to see how you're going to see a lasting end to this. Huge amount of damage has been done to the trauma on both sides, especially on the Palestinian side. And there is no immediate end in sight. And essentially, if the war was to come to an end, if there was some sort of ceasefire, then that could be a start, even a relatively short one. We did have a three-week one back in last autumn. But we might get one of those again. That's about all that can be hoped for at the moment. And then bit by bit, it might be possible to get some reconciliation. Because remember, you know, just before this terrible war started, there were major women's peace groups, Palestinian and Israeli, meeting fairly regularly. And you still have some settlements in Israel that are joint Arab-Israeli settlements. One or two of them, and they find it pretty difficult times. But there have been attempts made, and we should remember that. You know, conflicts can come to an end, but this is going to be a very difficult, protracted process. And at the moment, in terms of the nature of the Israeli government, we're in the middle of a perfect storm.
Paul, thank you very much for joining us. Paul Rogers, Emeritus Professor of Peace Studies at Bradford University. Thank you very much. Now,
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.